Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s. And each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Jordan, let's go.
Lawrence Holmes, noon to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, a radio.com sports station.
Previously on The Lawrence Holmes Show.
J.J. Stankovic covers the Bears.
You know, when we were talking to all the Bears assistants earlier this month, and, you know, Bill Lazor made mention of, well, you know, one week you could have, you know, half your wide receiver room out because they contracted it. And I was kind of like, okay, I'm glad someone's at least mentioning that, but it's not 1 week. You're out a minimum 2 weeks. And if anyone is symptomatic, then that player's out for a month, if not longer. You know, you look at what Von Miller said about his, you know, him having COVID and how for so long after he recovered and didn't have any symptoms, he still couldn't catch his breath. He still couldn't work out the way he liked to. And that's just working out. That's not playing a football game.
Well, I could talk about Luis Robert all day.
This is a rope by Nick Madrigal. This should be in the gap. He made that look routine.
Yeah.
That was not routine. He traveled so far to get that ball.
That's ridiculous.
That is ridiculous.
What he did today is a reflection of what he could possibly do in every aspect to change a game.
Make me a bicycle clown.
Ourselves quite a show yesterday. We were talking about a lot of different things. We spent some time talking about Luis Robert. And Scott Gregor went into detail about Robert in a way that I was not expecting. I will share that with you before we get done today at 2 o'clock. Also on the show, Mo Creek. If you're a Big Ten basketball fan, you know that name because he played at Indiana. You might not know that he's trying to get this $1 million because the TBT tournament has been a success thus far. I actually have a Aloho Daily on the whole thing today, but they're getting ready to play their 23rd game in this tournament. And last I saw, they've been doing testing of everyone involved in the TBT, and they've had zero positive tests over the last 4 or 5 days. So that's great news. It's also the reason why I felt like the NBA should have just done a tournament. Me and Joe Cowley were talking about this last week. I felt like a double elimination tournament with the end being a 5 or 7 game series would have been easier to do than what the NBA is trying to do. And you're already seeing people breaking quarantine to go get in a line for food, and there's already rumors that Instagram models are being invited to get inside of the quarantine. I'm going to talk with Jason Goff about that at 1 o'clock. He has no idea. Well, I guess he might be listening, so maybe now he knows. But yeah, this is what I want to talk to him about, whether this can work with basketball. And there's some other things to consider too. Bruce Levine is going to be on the show at 1:30. I want to talk to him about what the Cubs and the White Sox are doing. The Cubs seem to be doing great as far as the testing aspect goes. Them continuing to post negatives when it comes to their COVID test. The only problem is that Major League Baseball can't get them their tests in time, so people end up not being a part of workouts because the Cubs are being very, very careful about what position they're putting their players in. There's a lot to discuss there. There's also the story of Elena Deladon. You used to play for the Sky, now a champ with the Mystics, and she tried to get a waiver to not play, and they were like, nope, you can't have one. Even though you've got Lyme disease, get your ass out there and play. So there's a lot to discuss. And I'm glad that you're along for the ride. Jordan Malley is producing the show today. Julio Raseo is part of the show today, so you'll be hearing maybe. I don't know. Jordan doesn't talk much on the show. Is it because you're afraid to talk on the show, Jordan?
No, absolutely not. I just don't want to step on toes.
No, that's not. It's an open forum here. The producers are a part of the show. And, I mean, Julio knows this, or is Julio in the back of the room now? Because sometimes that happens.
Yeah, Julio was up cutting tape. Oh, here he is.
See?
Just cutting up some audio here, Lawrence. Yasmani Grandal speaking right now.
Okay, all right. Well, I'll let you get back to that, and I'll stop bothering you guys with my nonsense of bringing you on the air.
Well, Lawrence, I want to ask really quick. You mentioned about the NBA players contacting Instagram models. Could this have been the reason why Las Vegas was not chosen as an NBA bubble site? Because I thought it would have made more of a logistical sense with all the arenas and stuff. But then again, it is Las Vegas.
Well, what are you saying, Julio? Are you saying that there might be some things that are offered to someone in Las Vegas that aren't offered to them in Orlando?
Well, you can find anything anywhere, Lawrence, but it's the temptation of Sin City.
I don't know if you've been to the Tampa, Orlando area of Florida.
I've been to Tampa in August, but never to the Key West during the fantasy season, if you know my drift.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff down there that you don't even have to ask the Instagram models to come by. This is going to be an interesting experiment, to say the least, that ends up happening down there in Orlando. And I, for one, am looking forward to seeing how it all plays out, although let me go on the record with, I would have preferred them to do what the TBT is doing, and I feel like it would have done huge numbers. If the NBA was like, we're going to have a double elimination tournament, it's going to take 17 days. At the end of it, we're going to have two teams play in a series of games the traditional way. Man, they could have gotten anyone in and out of there in 3 weeks, gotten their champion, and gotten ready for whatever next season is going to be and whenever it's going to start. So I'm kind of looking forward to talking with Mo Creek about all the things that the TBT put in place and what it was like, or what it is like, to live in that bubble. Also, there's $1 million on the line. Championship game is tonight. I thought Overseas Elite was going to do it. They didn't. All I know is I can't have that Golden Eagles team win. I just can't. I joked about this on the podcast, but if you listen to this show, you know I'm 100% real when I say this. When it comes to me and emoting like a fan, I don't really do that anymore, because once you learn how the sausage is made, when you cover a team, you're kind of not supposed to do that. There's really only one place where my hatred of another team still comes out, and it's my love for DePaul, okay? So I hate Marquette more than any traditional rival of DePaul. I mean, I don't really love Notre Dame, but I hate Marquette. And so this group of players that are on this Golden Eagles team are all players that used to terrorize DePaul. I wish them health, but I hope they lose tonight. And I'm going to tell Mo Creek that too. All right. Let's talk about hockey for a second. Let's talk about the Blackhawks, because there's some news with the Blackhawks. The Blackhawks are getting ready to bubble in, and they're going to take on Edmonton, and there's been a lot of conversation about whether there's any advantage to a team that's playing on its home ice, even though there's not going to be any fans there. Hockey's weird. So anyone, to me, it's like baseball this season. Anyone who gets into this thing has a chance. Now, technically, the Blackhawks have not gotten into it. They're in the play-in round with Edmonton. But if they win the series, then they find themselves in the playoffs. it looks like they're going to do this without Corey Crawford. Stop me if you've heard this before. But Corey Crawford is, what's the term that they use, Jordan? Unfit to play?
Correct.
Okay, so the NHL is, they've already been super secretive about this to begin with. Whenever it comes to any sort of injury or malady, they're always super secretive about it. Now you add in everything that has to do with COVID, and you've got them being super, super secretive about it. With Corey Crawford, with all the things that he's gone through, and so that you understand my point of view on Crawford, I think Crawford is one of the most underrated champions in the history of Blackhawks hockey. I think that that guy, everyone has been looking to replace Corey Crawford for forever. And all he's done is been a successful cup-winning goalie. That being said, with everything that he's gone through over the last year and a half, I kind of want Corey Crawford to just retire. I know that he wants to play, and he wants to try and figure out a way to play. I just want him to be all right. And I worry that with everything, every injury, every head trauma that he's had, vertigo, whatever else that's gone on with him, I feel like hockey's not the best thing for him. And he has nothing left to prove. He's done all that he can, and he's proven all he can, and he's won cups. There's nothing else to do. But as it stands right now, they're going to be without him. And the season starts in about 2 weeks. 10 days from baseball, Cubs baseball here on the Score, 10 days from now. It's starting to feel a little bit more real because you're getting umpires now at these scrimmages that are happening. And we're getting closer as long as everything is all right and we get this testing taken care of. But back to the Blackhawks and Corey Crawford. This was Jeremy Colliton yesterday talking about Crawford and him not being available.
Today, Corey's unfit to play or to participate. So it's an opportunity for now for those other guys to compete. And we'll probably rotate those three guys, Subban, Delia, and Lankinen. We'll rotate them through the first group. It's a great opportunity for them and a great opportunity for us to evaluate them. And we expect a lot of competition. And we have confidence in all three of those guys that they're going to make it hard on us and play at a high level.
I missed just the very beginning of the Corey answer. Is there a time frame? Like, could he be back in a couple weeks, or is it just up in the air?
Yeah, for now, just he's unfit to play. And I think, you know, the NHL has been pretty clear that's going to be the policy going forward as far as how we announce all injuries. And so that's all I have for you.
Hi, Coach. If Corey was unable to go, would one of the three have an upper hand, or would you see competition, or how do you look at that?
We've told them it's going to be based on how they perform, and they're all going to be given equal opportunity. And, you know, we have Matt Tompkins here as well, who, you know, he's been a really done a good job at the American League and East Coast levels. And so it's an opportunity for him to compete as well. So there's obviously, at the end, we're going to have to make a decision, but we want those guys to make it as difficult as possible.
Okay, yeah, I want them to make it as difficult as possible as well. Why don't we hear from the general manager of the Blackhawks, Stan Bowman?
The way we are handling this is, you know, we're looking at the guys that are here and ready to play. And when Corey's in that group, then we can talk about Corey. But, you know, the focus today was to get ourselves back going. And we've got four goaltenders here. And, you know, the goal is to be prepared when the time is right. We've got some time, certainly. You know, our first game isn't for several weeks here. So, you know, that's a tough one to speculate on.
Okay. I feel like Stan's a little callous in talking about that, the way that he is. I'm sure that's not how he feels. It just kind of comes across that way. This texter asked a very interesting question. What does unfit to play mean? Does it mean that he has the virus or an injury? When I first heard, I thought it meant that he was out of shape. Now, usually when we hear that term unfit in soccer, in the Premier League, it's usually someone who's coming back from injury. This is complicated because I would tell you that the answer is probably more injury related, but I don't know that. And the NHL doesn't want you to know. And in some cases, they can't release information. All of this stuff is going to be difficult for us to navigate in every single sport. In trying to find out if a guy is injured and if there's a timetable for an injury for a player to return, or if a guy's dealing with COVID and there's no real timetable for that. Either way, when it comes to Corey Crawford, and this texter is like, why you want to replace him? I don't want to replace him. I want him to live a healthy life. And I feel like he has sacrificed enough in his career. Now, maybe he doesn't feel that way. But considering all of the things that Corey Crawford has dealt with, concussions and vertigo and everything else, you don't have to go out there, especially in this environment, Crow. You don't have to do that. The Tech Zone is brought to you by Rosen Hyundai of Algonquin. Save time and shop online at rosenhyundai.com. And we are broadcasting live from the Score Hyundai Studios, brought to you by your local Hyundai dealers. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about the TBT, the basketball tournament, if you're unfamiliar. They play for $1 million. The winning team gets $1 million, winner take all. We're going to talk with one of the participants, Mo Creek. Hoosier, next here on The Score.
Lawrence Holmes, noon to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, a radio.com sports station.
It's called the basketball tournament. Look, the name is simple and the idea is simple. 24 teams, $1 million prize, winner take all.
Marcus Key behind the line.
Fouls to give.
Looking. Creek. Got it! Sunlight Cancer wins and they go to the championship.
That highlight is courtesy of ESPN. I was watching that Sunday night. Mo Creek sends Sideline Cancer to the championship game, which will be tonight, 6 p.m. on ESPN. I've been watching this tournament and have been enjoying it thus far. Maurice Creek was nice enough to join us right here on The Score. He joins me on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline. Alpamonte Ford has 500 new and used vehicles for you to choose from in Melrose Park, or you can just check out alpamonteford.com. There's $1 million on the line tonight, and Mo Creek can help his team, Sideline Cancer, win it all. Mo, thanks for joining me, man. I appreciate it.
Man, thank you for having me on the show, man.
All right, well, let's talk about this. I got so many questions that I want to ask you about this. First of all, the fact that you're playing a game in like 5 hours and you're willing to jump on the show is great. So how did you catch on with Sideline Cancer?
This started 3 years ago. So I was in Finland, and my teammate from Indiana, Remy Abel, and a guy we played against because he was in the Big Ten, Jermaine Marshall, he played at Penn State. They both were playing together on the same team, and I was playing on a different team from them in Finland. So after our last game together, they asked me to play in the TBT. Didn't know what the team was or anything, so I was like, yeah, of course, because I'll do it. Because of the fact that I had a team in Maryland and I didn't get picked, but they were playing, and they were going to play, and then they asked me to play, and I said, yeah, I play, and then it was for a cause, too, so that just brought me in even more, and, you know, 3 years later, I'm here.
So what's the mission of Sideline Cancer?
It's just, you know, playing for pancreatic cancer, anybody who has pancreatic cancer, any cancer, for real, but pancreatic cancer is what they established herself on, because you know, Kathy Griffin and husband and Jordan Griffin's father passed away from it. And you know, we play for them every day. We play for Jermaine, who's not here with us today. Rest in peace to his soul. You know, we play for each other. You know, we care about each other so much. And it's just a whole camaraderie. And I'm glad that I picked to play for Sideline Cancer Organization.
Mo Krieg, you can watch him tonight. He's averaging 30 minutes, 15 points, and 6 rebounds a game in this tournament so far. The basketball championship happens. The basketball tournament championship happens tonight at 6 o'clock. What's it been like living in this bubble for the last few weeks?
It's been tough at times. You know, you want to get out and do things, but at the same time, I like it as well because it locks you in. You know, it shows you that you have a goal, you have something that you're actually playing for. So to be inside the bubble with my guys and, you know, just spend time with my guys, and that's all I can do. I was appreciative of it more than anything.
Yeah, it seems like for true hoopers, like having a chance to actually still hoop, and the only thing you have to do is be smart and listen to all of the doctors and the medical people, it seems like it could be a lot of fun if approached the right way.
Yeah, and they, you know, TBT has done a great job of, you know, making sure we do our testing, making sure we have food and you know, hospitality and everything like that. So they've done a great job. We've done a great job of just sticking with our guys and, you know, building that togetherness still. And, you know, we got one more game. We got one more shot at it. So, you know, what way to go out with a bang?
Look, you played at GW, you played at IU, so you've played big-time college basketball. You've been playing professionally all around the world, which is something I want to ask you about in a little bit. But the fact that the money is on the table tonight, what's it like getting ready to know that there's a significant amount of money coming your way if you guys can pull this off?
It's huge. But it also shows the work that we put in to get here. You know, nobody thought we were going to get here. Let's just be honest. Other than the people that's playing, the people that's part of the organization. You know what I mean? You look at it every day, and we look at the brackets. We look at people's brackets, and we see that we're the underdog. I mean, it's just crazy that people still feel as if we're still the underdog because of we thought we were not underdogs. What we did last year, we came into Wichita State and beat Kansas. We beat Wichita State at Wichita State. We lost to the team we're playing to tonight, yes, but at the same time, we still feel as if we got something to prove, and tonight would be the night we prove it.
Mo, I got to tell you, man, when I saw that you guys were matched up against Overseas Elite, knowing that they've won this tournament before and how well Joe Johnson was playing, I was worried that you guys weren't going to be able to continue to pull these upsets off. What was the difference in the game?
Just heart. And togetherness. One thing about us is that we know we are the underdog. So we go out there and play as if we have a chip on our shoulder. A lot of people doubted us because of Joe Johnson and because of the Overseas Elite. I can't even tell you how many times I've seen that on either my social media pages or, you know, people calling my phones and stuff like that, and like, man, I don't know, and stuff like that. We never wavered our emotions. We stuck with each other, and we just believed. And, you know, when you believe in each other, it's a whole new ball game to what we can actually be. We can definitely be the most special group out of the TBT history if we win this one tonight just because of just sticking together for 2 weeks. You know what I mean? A lot of teams, they've been together for years. We only been together for a certain amount of time each summer. And to come in here and do what we did today, I mean, not today, but, you know, throughout the whole tournament, just by having one practice, one real practice for real, and it's amazing to me.
It seems like you still have a lot of basketball left to play. Do you think that the visibility of this tournament and playing in the championship game tonight will give you the opportunity to let scouts from around the world see what you can do?
That's the goal. I mean, the whole world is going to be watching this game tonight just because of the fact that it ain't no other sport on TV. Maybe you might catch soccer on ESPN2, but we on ESPN, and this is bringing basketball back. And so TBC, like I said, did a good job of bringing it back and giving us the opportunity to show what we are about, and have 197 countries watch us. So it's not even just the United States, everybody inside of the world, all over the world, just watching one game tonight. And, you know, we're going to come out there with our best effort just because we know how big this stage is for us.
Maurice Creek is joining me. We're talking about the TBT, the basketball tournament, the championship for $1 million. Winner take all is tonight at 6 o'clock on ESPN. He plays for Sideline Cancer, so you can watch him tonight. Of all the places that you've played, because I'm looking at the list of the places you've been, what was your favorite place outside of the United States that you played, and why?
I think I would either have to say Ukraine or Israel. And the reason why, in Ukraine, it was so much me having to lock in. You know, a lot of people go out to out of these countries and stuff like that and try to have fun and stuff like that. Not saying that you can't have fun and stuff like that, but when I'm about my business, I'm about my business. So Ukraine was where I feel like I was most locked in at. I was just about my craft, wasn't worried about partying or seeing anybody or anything like that. I just was, you know, just ready to go every game and every practice. And, what else did I say? I
said, Israel.
In Israel. Israel, because it was a new opportunity for me. So, Israel, I didn't know nothing about. I didn't know what to expect in Israel. But I learned so much from playing on the team that, you know what I'm saying, depends on you so much to do what you need to do to win. And, you know, unfortunately, I didn't stay there too much longer, but just the fact of the matter was that, you know, I learned from a lot of the young guys. That was probably the youngest team I've ever played on overseas. So to have, like, it was like I was the grandpa of the team. So for me to be that, it was a new experience for me.
Did you ever think when you were growing up that basketball would give you an opportunity to see the world like this?
I knew I would see the world, but I didn't know how I would see it. You know what I mean? I didn't know whether it was going to be going to the NBA or going overseas. At that time, you know, I was hot coming from college. So my whole thing was I was ready to go to the NBA. It didn't happen. So now I was ready to go overseas. That did happen. So, you know, with that happening, I've been to 6 spots. That's amazing to me. So, I had it in mind, just didn't know how it was going to happen.
What do you think of playing with the Elam ending now that you've done it for a few years?
I love it. It brings that background, that playground background check. So, you know, basically with the Elam ending, you got to score. You can't just say, oh, I'm going to run the clock out and think you're going to win a game like that. You have to absolutely score that last bucket. And a lot of times, if you're not ready to do it, it won't happen for you. So I love it. I think everybody should implement it because, I mean, it's amazing. If you have played in the TBT, you would feel like I'm on the playground again, and that's what it should feel like, honestly.
And so for people who don't know, the Elam ending is you play the fourth quarter down to the four-minute mark. At the four-minute mark, the team that's leading, you add 8 points to their lead, and then that becomes the final score. Like, that's the winning score. So either team has a chance to win, but you're only going up to that score, so you can't just bleed out the clock. You've got to play it, like, kind of straight up. So I'm actually really liking it, too. Last thing I got for you, Mo, I need you to do me a favor. Look, man, I understand that there's money on the line, and there are going to be a lot of people watching you. I need you to beat this Golden Eagles team, and here's why. I'm a DePaul guy, and Marquette, these dudes on this team, they used to terrorize DePaul. So I can't have them winning $1 million, too. So I'm going to need you to do work tonight, man.
Man, you know, I'm going to come out there with my best effort. And like I said, I think this is the game where everybody's going to be locked in on my team because we got knocked out by them last year. And you know, we ready to go because we know what we're playing for and who we're playing for.
Mo, good luck, man. Continue good health and success. And I hope that someone watches you and picks you up and you are playing wherever you want to play internationally or in the G League.
Appreciate it, man. I really do appreciate it. You know, that's the goal, just to show my skill and see if I can find a way, find a home. You know what I mean? That's the whole thing.
Well, good luck to you, man. Have a great night tonight, and please beat these dudes.
Appreciate these dudes, man.
Thanks, Mo. That is Mo Creek. He plays for Sideline Cancer. They will play in the championship game of the basketball tournament tonight at 6 o'clock. I don't know if you've been watching it, but it has been a lot of fun. And the fact that they have now played 23 games in this tournament over the last 2 weeks, they're going to conclude this thing, and it looks as if this is going to be a success as far as them not having to worry about COVID, that they've done a good job of bubbling. It's why I wish the NBA would have done a bubble similar to this and just done a tournament, get everyone in and out of there in like 17 days, and head on home. But we'll see if it ends up working. But I'm so serious about the Golden Eagles losing tonight. So serious. We're going to take a break. When we come back, I want to share something with you. Something that happened on yesterday's show reminded me of something else. And whether you're an MMA fan or not, I think that you'll appreciate what I want you to hear. We'll do that next here on The Score.
Lawrence Holmes, noon to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, a radio.com sports station.
I really enjoyed that conversation with Mo Creek. That was fun. I hope he wins tonight. I'm going to talk with Jason Goff at 1 o'clock. We're going to talk about the NBA and whatever else is on our mind. Bruce Levine's going to join me around 1:30. We're going to talk about the two baseball teams. So yesterday, I was talking with Dave Ross, my friend, not the manager of the Cubs, although the manager of the Cubs and I have become friends too because we share a love for donuts. But this is Dave Ross, the journalist. He was on the show yesterday, and we were talking about the Kamaru Usman fight against Jorge Masvidal. And there are a lot of people who didn't like the fight because it was kind of boring. And Dave talked about the style of Usman and why it isn't crowd-pleasing.
Because he's a wrestler. It's that simple. There has been a stigma with the UFC, really since the popularity. It was born of a fight between Forrest Griffin and Stephen Bonner. We're talking the real beginning of the popularity of the sport and why people were so captivated. And fans, go back and watch that fight if you haven't watched it from the early 2000s. It was just a stand-up for guys that normally like to wrestle. And it was a stand-up brawl, blood everywhere. And that kind of became the brand of what the Ultimate Fighting Championship was supposed to be all about, right? Not so much mixed martial arts, but let's stand and brawl and let's see what you got with these 4-ounce gloves. And I think we've almost been conditioned over time that that's what we expect to see. And why is the Conor McGregor, why does he take off? Well, he's got the mouthpiece, and then he's got the one-punch knockout ability. As great as Khabib Nurmagomedov is, some people go, you know, he holds you down. He holds down Conor McGregor for 4 rounds until finally gassing him out and stopping him. And it's not necessarily the most pleasing aesthetically to the eye for the American fight fan. But what is brilliant, I think, about the UFC is we are starting to appreciate certainly Brazilian jiu-jitsu. I think people that have been watching the sport now for a couple decades have gone to love watching a guy like Anderson Silva and the way that he can knock you out with a front kick like he did to Vitor Belfort back in the day, right? And you can get in these different type of styles, maybe with the Muay Thai style in that clinch fighting with the high knees. And there's all these different styles of fights that get brought to the table. Now, when you get a pure wrestler, like Kamaru Usman tends to be, sometimes, and the criticism on the Masvidal fight on Saturday night was, he wore down Jorge because, well, why would you stand and trade with a guy that can knock you out with one punch like Masvidal? To me, it's a smart way of fighting. It might not be, again, the fan favorite way to fight, but I am never going to knock a guy for who's going to take less punishment and get the easy work done. And easy work by mean grinding him out. And that's what he did to Masvidal. To me, if that's the easiest path to victory, don't do it for the fans. Do it for you and keep that strap and keep making money.
I'm all about doing whatever it takes to win as long as it's within the rules. And I get the idea of the aesthetics, and sometimes people don't like when it grapplers versus punchers. Like, they want to see people trade. And in the last fight that Usman had with Covington, that was what was going on. He and Covington were trading in the middle of the octagon. It got me to thinking, though. I had this incredible conversation with Frank Mir. It was about maybe a year ago or so. And he was fighting in Bellator, and we were in studio, and we were talking about stand-up versus wrestling versus submission, like what it's like to submit someone. And I found his explanation of submission fighting to be fascinating, and I thought I would bring it back out because I think it's one of the more interesting interviews that I've ever done. Take a listen to what Frank Mir said about that style of MMA.
Trained martial arts traditionally my whole life, and a lot of submissions are in the traditional martial arts. Even your so-called stand-up arts have wrist locks and chokes and arm bars. But, you know, you don't really train them against an unwilling opponent. It was always more of a guy, okay, I'm going to grab you by the wrist, and now you're going to throw me with a joint lock. Okay. So I understood the concepts. And then being introduced to Brazilian jiu-jitsu, where randori or free rolling was much more the mainstay of the curriculum, you got to go ahead and work with an unwilling opponent. Like, okay, I'm going to try to choke you, but you don't want me to choke you. And the first couple times I worked out at it, and guys much smaller than I am that were nowhere near as athletic were able to choke me and submit me, it made me fall in love with it. I remember thinking, like, wow, this is truly a powerful form of one-on-one combat. Whereas hitting somebody, it's not an exact science. It's like almost like fighting with clubs. No two shots are always exactly the same. I mean, we see it all the time. Guys get the perfect right hand landed on them, and they're still standing there when the dust clears. Same guy can get caught again by a punch that you don't like, well, that dropped him, that landed. There's so much to where the body and energy and form, it's almost like hitting a baseball. It's not as consistent as far as being able to line all the moving pieces up. Whereas grappling is much easier to be consistent with because there's a much more of a control factor. It slows down. I'm able to make adjustments on the fly and go in there and adapt to the differences of the body. And so it became a form that I realized was much more dangerous. And then even looking around in Mother Nature, I'm looking around and going, wow, if you think about it, strikers, pure strikers, are actually the prey, you know, deers, buffalo, things that hit things are trying to create space to get out of here. It's not really a form of hunting. Now, if you look in the animal kingdom, things that want to eat something, predators, they're grapplers. They grab a hold of you and they go for your neck.
Snakes,
owls. Tigers, lions, bears, hawks. They're going to, you know, you have a crocodile. It's going to snatch onto you and strangle you. It goes for the neck. It goes for that, for a grappling type move. And that's how you go after somebody in that sense. So I realize that, oh, we are built for grappling. We're not really built as striking. It's not as efficient. That's why even we have to do things to prop ourselves up. I love boxing. It's very entertaining, and I love to do striking arts. I think it's a part of martial arts. But as far as my go-to move, I'm like, well, the human hand, 20-plus bones in it. It breaks pretty easily. That's why we have to wrap our hands. The taping of our hands are not to protect each other's heads. It's to protect our hands so we can hit harder. So even that being said, it's like, well, it's not even realistic in a real form of martial arts, because if we were in a street fight, I might land one punch to your head and all of a sudden my hand is shattered. Whereas grappling can be a full spectrum. I could be in a fight with one of my best friends who decides that he's had not as much to drink as he thinks he's had, and he wants to drive his car. I take his back. I put a choke on. He goes to sleep. There's no damage done to him. I just, temporarily restrict a little bit of blood flow, made him lose consciousness. No different than having a cold and standing up too fast. He wakes up. He's not, it's over with. I can pin him down. We can have this conversation. So it can be extremely humane, or all to the point to where if it was, you know, if I'm overseas in a battle and a guy walks through the door and all of a sudden we're going hand to hand, that same choke, same maneuver, same technique, now just hold a little bit longer, becomes a lot more lethal. So it, to me, it was a much more versatile tool, a form of combat that truly is a way of incapacitating or controlling a violent situation in a one-on-one encounter.
You just talked beautifully about submission art. And that was one of the things that drew me into MMA in the first place is I'm a boxing fan. I'm someone who enjoys fight night in Vegas. I think that there's nothing like that. But when friends of mine said, you need to start watching this because there's a real beauty to it, and I started to pick up on it, I'm not sure that the everyday fan that might be leaning towards trying out MMA understands the beauty of Brazilian jiu-jitsu or in other forms of, right. of martial arts. That why doesn't that sell the way that maybe a knockout sells?
Well, because it takes a much more of an understanding. Probably the same reason why American football is not an international sport, right? I love American football. It's very entertaining. It's a $1 billion business here in the U.S., but most men and, you know, women grow up watching it from a Pop Warner level all the way up from high school to college. We understand what we're watching. If you go overseas and you're like, hey, you like football? They're like, I don't know what that is. You blow the whistle. I see 11 guys on each side run into each other. The play lasts for like 3 seconds, and then you guys re-huddle and do it again a minute later. They're like, it's dumb. You know, that's the actual words that people – it's like, I can't get it. Soccer, you know, regular football, easier for people to kind of follow. They're spread out. It's a bigger field. Also, too, you know, more people play it on an international level because pads and helmet, a little more expensive to have in all the countries. It's like, well, if we buy a soccer ball, everybody
has
it.
Here's a ball. Right, you're good.
So going back to that mindset, you can't take – if I took – you take a date to go to the fights. I take it to a boxing match. Pretty much anybody in the world – understands what's going on to a point. Now, they might not understand a Floyd Mayweather fight, the mastery of his defense. I'm like, yo, he's making that guy look silly. That dude's a world champion. You don't make people like look silly like that. Whereas they still understand and grasp the concept of like, oh, he just hit him in the face and he's on the ground. I get it. Where if most people, if you don't have a background in grappling yourself, you've never taken a Brazilian jiu-jitsu class. Let's face it, wrestling is not big in school like compared to basketball. So a lot of people don't have the background to understand what's going on. They'll watch one guy on top of another. They're like, it's just two guys rolling around. And that's why when I do my commentary, I try to make sure people understand what they're seeing. And that's when I take great compliments where, you know, people that follow the sport, I'm not telling them anything they never heard before. But whenever I have someone come up to me and go, wow, you know, my mother-in-law sat in the room and for the first time ever, she actually sat down and was entertained because she understood that the one guy was in the guard trying to work for the other guy's arm and what he was looking for and why the other guy was moving the way he was moving. And then she, you know, instead of it just being two guys with their legs wrapped around each other, she understood the battle that was actually occurring, the intricacies of what was happening. So that's why it just takes a little bit more education to understand what's going on. And that's why I start off telling people it's just like football. If you don't know what's going on, it's not the most entertaining. But once you do, it's a beautiful sport. And that's what the grappling aspect of MMA has in it, is that without that background of understanding what you're looking at, it's not so easy to follow as boxing is.
I loved that interview. Like, the whole interview is great. I think Frank and I talked for maybe like 35 minutes or something like that. But having someone break down the intricacies of submission art and why those things can be as exciting if you understand what it is that you're looking at, it changed my perspective on how to view a fight. And I get that he's talking about Floyd Mayweather. A lot of people consider him to be a boring fighter. But if you look at the way that he defends himself in the ring, there's artistry to it. And it's so funny to me that, especially a place like Chicago, like, we love defense. Like, we love it. But for some reason, when it comes to our fights, like, we want it to be all offense and almost no defense. But I just thought I would share that with you because it's so – it really does, I think, a service to explaining what happens in fighting. And I never heard anyone break down submission art that way before. So I thought this was a good time to share. So shout out to Frank Mir for making things easy for me. We're going to take a break. When we come back, Jason Goff is going to join me. I'm going to ask him about the bubble, the one down in Orlando, and whether or not he thinks the NBA season is going to conclude. We'll do that next here on The Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.